all mortals have driven back your border. Your treaties seduced you as to their effect. Mortal men at peace with you repaid your food with treachery, and you were none the wiser. Obadiah chapter 1, verse 7, from the version of Yours Truly from 2003, our daily scripture for today, little children. So that's how bad it was. It wasn't just like a thief that came and took something out of someone's house. In the case of this pronouncement against Edom, it was going to be worse for Edom than that. Verse 6, how eagerly sought after is Esau? Esau is Edom. Edom is the place where Esau lived. So they're one and the same. And in verse 5, thieves only take as much as they can carry. But this was going to be worse than that. All mortals have driven back your border, Jehovah says in the prophecy of Obadiah there. And Esau's food had been repaid with treachery. And, even worse, Esau didn't even know. So it was pretty bad. Much worse than a thief. A thief, at least you know that something was missing. In this case, Esau didn't even know what had been done. He was none the wiser at all. So in our study of the Ark of Urartu today, we have a very, very interesting part, quotation from Jubilees. But first we have this illustration in the Syriac language. Looks like this. It's not a very sharp or high resolution image, but that's what the Syriac language looks like. It's sort of angular, isn't it? It's got some triangle shapes in it, and angles, either upside down V shapes or L shapes that are at an angle and things like that. A lot of other letters there too. But looks like no other language with which I'm familiar, except maybe a little bit like Hebrew, I suppose, possibly, but not anything like very many other languages. That's what I believe. That's my impression. The use of ancient texts. Now, the paragraph, chapter 10, paragraph 11 of part 2 of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. To define a start for the ancient history, make it 2774 BCE. And we noted above how this date matched with exactness the 2776 AM, Anno Mundi that is, in other words, year of the world counting from the creation of Adam, or the creation of the world, the same year. See, in the creationist, you know, six-day creation view, in that one year, the universe and Adam were all created in 6 days. So 2776, counting from the creation in years, is called 2776 Anno Mundi. And according to Sincellus, the remarkable date 2776 Anno Mundi was the time of the dispersion, according to him. So we made a slight adjustment and said, well, that's actually exactly equivalent to our date 2774. In our chronology, counting from our date for Adam, which is 5550, minus 2776, give or take a year, that's 2774. So that's what it is. Pretty impressive agreement with Syncellus that we found. So we're taking the 2776, though, not as the dispersion, but as the beginning of the Egyptian calendar, which is also the beginning of the rule of Osiris or Menes or Nimrod or whoever that is who began to rule in that year, 6 years after the death of Shem, who was of the line favored by the patriarch Noah, right? Shem was. So when Shem died, something new began, which was this Egyptian calendar in 2774, right? We've already established that through our own research. And 2774, it was sometime after that, we believe, when the dispersion took place. But it's just so remarkable that also he said, but the other thing was, he said the dispersion was in year 5, Syncellus said in the Book of Sothis. We had, do I have that? Let's see. It's not easy to get to, unfortunately. This might be it. But we don't, I've got the copy of it as a file. However, when I upgraded my operating system, I no longer can see the file properly. So it's still visible, but it's got some color distortion that happened in the new Mac OS. So I can get it online without opening the file on my, you know, hard copy. But that's the old Chronicles. So the next one is going to be the Book of Sophos. Here it is. Yes, and we go down to right there. Page 239 of Waddell, it says, the general cosmic year 2776. Right? Now, well, we don't know actually who edited this. I think we... Yeah, it's Syncellus. Look, you see? Syncellus, page 195. In the original Greek there. It's attributed to Syncellus. That's how we know that it is Syncellus. Maybe he's not the originator of this date, 2776, but he might be. So the thing is, we agree with what Syncellus says here, but the 2776 corresponding exactly to 2774 BCE. That's the difference. 2776 Anno Mundi is exactly 2774 before the Common Era, but only if Adam and the creation occurred in 5550. Only if that's true, then 5550 minus 2776 equals 2774 before Christ, or before the Common Era. 2774, it's before the Common Era because Christ was not born at the turn of the Common Era. He could have been, you know, ideally he should have been, but he wasn't, according to what we've determined. And the Common Era was just an arbitrary designation that was established by somebody who believed Christ was born at the turn of the Common Era, but they weren't an expert on the birth of Christ. They were just establishing the standard date for the Common Era, which is arbitrary. They just established an arbitrary date. So Christ was born in 6 BCE, not at the turn of the Common Era, but it's remarkable that, I mean, it wouldn't have, I don't think it would have mattered, would it? Well, yes, it would have mattered. where the common error is what determines that these two numbers add up. The 2774 is our date for BCE year of this eclipse. If we had a different point for the turn of the common era, if it was set at, if the turn of the common era were set exactly 6 years earlier, that would change. The year 2774 would not be the date of this eclipse that occurred at the Arx site in Turkey. It would be instead 6 years less in BCE, right? If we were already, if we moved the common era back. So, I mean, it would take fewer years, that we would go back fewer years if we'd already moved the common era back, because the eclipse calculation is still going to be exactly the same. It's going to come out exactly at the same place. It's just going to be called a number 6 years different, right? If we change the zero point. So it's remarkable that only because of everything that was set up with the common era the way it was, and the person who did this calculation didn't use the common era, they used Anno Mundi, or the general cosmic year from Adam. And then he says that the dispersion took place in the fifth year of Phalek, which we find to be 2745, which is not 2776 Anno Mundi, according to our chronology, because that 2776 we are already calculated was 2774, not 2745, which is 29 years later than 2774. But it's still pretty close anyway, even if you do it that way. But we had decided that this 2776 was in fact not the dispersion, because it didn't agree with the fifth year of Phalek or the 34th year of the rule of Arphaxad, unless it was in fact 2745 that was being talked about, which would not be 2776 Anno Mundi. It would be later, 2776 plus the difference between 2774 and 2745, which is 29 years, which we'd add, it would be 2805 Anno Mundi instead of 2776. But since this number 2776 is so perfectly aligned with 2774, the year of our eclipse, it just seems foolish to waste it. We'd rather reinterpret what was written. Just see it as being exactly right according to the eclipse year, and then count the dispersion from the 34th year of Arphaxad, counting from 2780 BCE, for the first year of Arphaxad, which gives us 2746, or, you know, which would overlap possibly with 2745 too, depending on what month you're talking about, in which it began, when, what month Shem died, for example. So yeah, it's actually such a great alignment that we don't want to waste that. It's just such a phenomenal coincidence. But there are no coincidences if you believe in a creator, right? It's just everything has a reason. But we noted above how this date matched, that is 2774 BCE matched with 2776 Anno Mundi of Syncellus, but this is only in regard to Nimrod and the Sumerian form of writing, which is related to early astronomy in Shinar. Let's keep reading. Nimrod's rebellion, the same culture that developed in the land of Shinar, was known for false worship or astrology. Astrology is a misapplication of astronomy, as the word in Latin astrologia actually means astronomy. The Babylonian culture of Shinar is equated with astrology from Nimrod's time up until Cyrus freed Israel in 539 BCE. Alphabetic writing comes to Nimrod's days by Phineas Pharsa. Phineas Pharsa, two words, namesake to the Phoenician language, appears in Irish tradition in the days of Ninus, that is Nimrod. Yeah, he's sometimes falsely called Ninus, but it's Nimrod's days. This faithfully confirmed by Muslim writers of both the 9th and 13th century CE, who both identify man's first language. The history of the prophets and kings from the 9th century Muslim theologian Al-Tabari calls it Syriac, which is confused into 72 languages. After Nimrod builds a tower and God destroys it, evidently the Tower of Babel, he calls it Syriac, and we just saw the sample of Syriac from the Shoyin collection, manuscript 577, at the beginning of our study today, which was from about the 11th century of the Common Era, that is, after the turn of the Common Era, and it was on paper. And it was located at Mount Sinai, so in Egypt, that is. But also, a Muslim historian of the 13th century by the name of Abu al-Fida added that Eber is allowed to keep Hebrew, man's original tongue, as he did not participate in the building, that is, of the tower. He didn't build the tower along with the other builders. Syriac is described as a Semitic abjad, similar to Hebrew, which means it is akin to Arabic, Phoenician, and that is Aramaic, Phoenician, and Arabic. Hebrew is akin to those, and Syriac is a Semitic abjad similar to Hebrew. Let's repeat that, which means it is akin to Aramaic, Phoenician, and Arabic. Hebrew, the language of the Bible, is called the tongue of the creation in the book of Jubilees, chapter 12. Now, verse 25 of that chapter says, "The Lord God said, open his mouth and his ears, that he may hear and speak with his mouth, with the language which has been revealed, for it had ceased from the mouths of all the children of men from the day of the overthrow of Babel. And I opened his mouth and his ears and his lips, and I began to speak with him in Hebrew in the tongue of the creation. And he took the books of his fathers, and these were written in Hebrew, and he transcribed them, and he began from henceforth to study them." End quote. That's the most remarkable thing, isn't it? It implies it wouldn't mean much. That statement would not mean as much if it had not been several hundred years since the time of Babel, when Abraham received this miracle gift of gaining knowledge of Hebrew at that time. If it were immediately following the Tower of Babel, he would already know the language because he would have already been familiar with it. But it had been hidden since the time of Babel. So, although, of course, it still has some meaning, even if Babel had occurred shortly before, because during the time of Babel, the language was confused. But the thing is, we don't believe that language was confused for God's people or for Abraham and his family. The language for them was in their family all along. It was the Hebrew language. So that language very likely was not confused. But then again, it had to have been confused. That's right, yeah, it was confused over the time, over the several hundred years. it's very interesting to try and understand this. But, I mean, it's more likely that it took several hundred years for it to be lost to the family through generations of not speaking it, right? That seems like that's more likely from what we know. But we can't rely on our own understanding. So this is not proof that the Tower of Babel happened several hundred years, I should say, before Abram. But the proof is that it's in our chronology. Our chronology tells us it did happen several hundred years before Abram in the 2700s BC when the Tower of Babel fell. So Abram was being spoken to in Hebrew quite a bit later, and it was a miracle for him to receive the tongue of the creation, it's called there, and it's the Hebrew language, according to the Book of Jubilees. Now, the Book of Jubilees is not an inspired book, not like the Bible. So this is just incidental information. It's not something we regard as completely true. So we have to take it with a grain of salt, as we say in English. We have to take it with discretion, or, you know, with hesitation, with caution, meaning a grain of salt, is how we put that. But Abraham thus learned from the books of his fathers in the above quoted text, learning the sacred writing, the Hebrew, which had not been spoken since Nimrod and Babel. So during the time of the confusion, our paragraph here says, the Hebrew language had been temporarily lost, right, from the time of Nimrod. Yeah, so it's easier to understand it since there is a period of several hundred years, 500 years or more, between the time of the Tower of Babel and its collapse or failure and the dispersion that accompanied that, and the time of Abraham, those many centuries or several centuries, multiple centuries later. It's easier to understand in our chronology. But, you know, this doesn't prove our chronology. It makes a lot of sense in our chronology. It's a bigger miracle that it would be restored after hundreds of years in a miracle revelation to Abraham. It's a bigger miracle in that sense than for it to have been restored after just a few years. Because in the book of Jasher, we saw that the Tower of Babel, and in the Book of Jubilees, I believe, it's all at the same time. In the Book of Jubilees, in the Book of Jubilees it says that Peleg, in the days of Peleg, they were building the tower. That's right. But the thing is, they have the generations different. In the later corrupted Hebrew manuscripts of the Bible, and that enables Abraham to be alive already at the time of the Tower of Babel, provided that Peleg was 140 years at the time of the construction of the Tower of Babel. But in our chronology, Peleg is just a child, but it doesn't really matter. Even if he were 140 years, which he's not in our chronology, but if he were at the time of the Tower of Babel, Abraham was still born much later, because in our chronology, each generation is 100 years more per generation. So it's 500 years instead of, 5 times 100 instead of, or 4 times 130, whatever it is, instead of, 4 times 30, which is only 100 or so years compared to 500 years between the time of Peleg and the time of Abram. And since Peleg was already 140 in their chronology, not ours, in our chronology, he's just born, barely. But it says that it was in the days of Peleg that the division of the earth occurred. It says that in the book of Genesis, the inspired word, the scriptures, and it doesn't say how old Peleg was at the time, though. So both, either chronology agrees with that, but only our chronology allows that, and necessitates, in fact, that Abraham lived 100 times 4 or 5 years later than the Tower of Babel. In Genesis 11, it mentions Peleg, but we have to go back to Genesis 10 to see Yeah, 10 and 25 of Genesis. Peleg, because in his days the earth was divided. That's what where we get that. It's from Genesis 10, 25. So, yeah, it doesn't say how old. In his days, though, could mean in his very early days. In his days, not his years, but in his days, you know, in, which could mean anything in terms of his age. But the tradition of the Book of Jubilees and the Book of Jasher give the age of Peleg as different, right? So our chronology invalidates those books, but our chronology does not invalidate the Bible. Not at all. In fact, it fits everything in the Bible better than these other chronologies do. That's why we have our genealogy. It's better as a chronology. And it enables this, these things that have not been spoken since Nimrod. If Abraham lived at the time of Nimrod, then why would that make any sense? How would it make sense if this language had ceased from the days of the overthrow of Babel, and Abraham was living at the time of the overthrow of Babel, then it wouldn't make any sense to say that it had ceased from the day of the overthrow of Babel. It wouldn't make as much sense at all, would it? If it was revealed to Abraham that he was alive during that time of overthrow, there's something wrong with that. You know, it would say, well, it would say it had ceased 10 years ago or 20 years ago, if that's what it was, but it says something which sounds like a much longer period of time. If they can't even remember how long it was in the text, they can't give the actual number of years. So our chronology fits better. But that's it. And we have 2745 or something for the dispersion. And Abraham born in 2206, more than 500 years later than the dispersion in our chronology. But, and there's more to read, too, in the Book of Jubilees. I'm sorry that the link to the Book of Jubilees is broken here, but you can find it if you go to, let me copy that somehow. Pseudo-Epigraphica. It's called P-S-E-U. DEPIGRAPHA.com. Pseudoepigraphica.com. Pseudoepigraphica is all one word. .com. And on their website, it's, let's see if I can get it. Maybe I can get it showing. Yeah, it's showing there now. Can read that. It's pseudoepigraphica.com/jubilees and then /12.htm for page 12. Page 12 is /12.htm. But It's under the directory Jubilees. One word, Jubilees, of course. J-U-B-I-L-E-E-S. So, when Abraham was in, he was called Abram at that time, but when he was living at that time in Haran, in Syria, he was wondering whether he should return to the land of the Chaldees. In verse 21, he was praying to Jehovah. And here, once again, it's written, this is written by rabbis who didn't believe in using the name of Jehovah. That's, you know, they just used the name God and God Most High and Lord. They didn't use Jehovah's name because they had a superstition about using the divine name, the rabbis did. So we don't think that this is a very original or accurate book for that reason. It's not inspired either for that reason. But when he asked that, it turned out that the Lord God said, I began to speak to or with him, that is Abram, in Hebrew, in the tongue of the creation, verse 26, Jubilees chapter 12. Remarkable. But that tells us that Hebrew was, according to that anyway, the book of Jubilees, which is not inspired, we can't rely on it, but it tells us that the original tongue was Hebrew. The most ancient tongue. And what we found yesterday was that agrees with the idea that the vocabulary of ancient Hebrew is much smaller than the vocabulary of the Greek language, the ancient Greek language, which was a much later language. At least we believe it was. It was derived because it had alphabet, it had vowels as well as consonants in it. The earliest languages were more primitive. They had fewer words, vocabulary of only 8,000 compared to 60,000 for Greek. 60 compared to 8. The Hebrew had only 8,000. And the Greek also had vowels, which the Hebrew didn't have. So that's it. As a written language, it was more primitive. But that's it for today's study. Hebrew was the primitive original, apparently. But December 29th, 2024, is the date in the Common Era. And the time is 1654. 1654. Hours Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green. Thank you very much for listening and watching. And you know I have affection for you. In my behalf, this is Sissy and this is Star saying bye for now. Today we did chapter 10, verse 11 of our article, The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express. So that's it for today.